Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast today. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, April 13th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Let everyone know why you like it. Give it a 5-star review. It'll make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. It's Monday. I'm giving you the show a little bit late because I was busy this weekend, and me being busy is a good thing because there's more for me to talk about on the show. And so there you have it. That was my reason, is a day late, but not a dollar short. How about that? How about that, you guys? Right? Because it kind of did. All right. So I have ESPN on mute. Mike and Mike just went off, and they were on location in Augusta for the Masters. And this kid, Jordan Spieth, won the Masters wire to wire from Thursday to Sunday. He was in the lead, and he just pretty much scorched everybody. Ended up winning by 4 strokes over Phil Mickelson and Justin Rose. And good for this kid. I did not watch any of it because Tiger Woods wasn't really in contention, even though he played well for coming off of injury. But like most black people, just kind of watch when Tiger's in the hunt. And I used to do a bit about my parents with Tiger Woods and Venus and Serena Williams, like whenever they were playing and in the, you know, close to victory, it would be really intense. And like Tiger Woods or Venus and Serena winning is like a civil rights movement every week. So that's how intense my parents are for Venus and Serena. And every time, whenever I call them, like, I'm like, hey, what's going on? It's like, oh, we're watching Serena. I'm like, okay, I'll talk to you guys later. Like, I just, like, because they're obsessed. My mom, dad, and my uncle, my dad's brother, are just super obsessed with them. And I get it. And I'm, you know, black, I was going to say Black Lives Matter, but they do. I'm not going to just throw that away. I'm not just going to, you know, throw a meaningful hashtag away, but I'm just saying, I get why they like it, because they grew up pretty much, they were young adults during the civil rights era, and they lived through some shit. So seeing them do well, it means something, and it means something to me. I guess that's why I inherited my love for black quarterbacks. And speaking of black quarterbacks, if you you know, I'm a fan of the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gatz. They do their weekly radio show, their daily radio show Monday through Friday, and then they have this special show called South Beach Sessions, where they interview an athlete or some type of sports personality for about 45 minutes to an hour. And usually the interviews are really revealing and thought provoking. They had Warren Moon on, I think last week or a couple weeks ago, and it was really good. And he brought a lot of perspective on what it was like for him to be a black quarterback in the, it's like late 70s, 80s, and the 90s. So, it was really good. It was really, really good. So hashtag black quarterbacks, black tennis players, black golfers. But with the Masters, you know, they've been trying for about 15 years to just not have Tiger Woods be the man. And this is before the drama that he had with his ex-wife in 09. It's way before that. It's been years of, this guy's going to be the next person. No, this guy's going to, you know, give Tiger competition. And nobody really did until, you know, Tiger had his back problems and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Tiger is still one of the greatest golfers to ever play the game. Like, he's undeniably the greatest. So he'll never beat Jack. He'll never win three more. I just don't see him doing it. White power, Hill Hydra. They just, you know, so they've written him off, but I think he might could still, you know, he might still have some juice in him, man. We don't know yet. And I was surprised that he came. I wasn't really surprised that he played last weekend. Cause he always really plays for the big tournaments, the majors, and he takes some time off and then he comes back. So I'm glad that he had a good showing. You know, it is what it is. So this is episode 114 of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Just checking back in with you just to let you know, if you were listening to this and you didn't know who the host is, it's me, Chris Lamberth. I was almost in a Ja Rule video. I was in a Fisher Peanuts commercial. So, you know, you're in good hands. You're in good hands. There's a lot of things I want to talk about. I want to talk about my week. I want to talk about some movies. I want to talk about an email that I got. I just want to talk to you guys. So hence the reason that I turned this microphone on and I'm giving you a show. So I want to talk about comedy a little bit. Shout out to Pete Bladel, friend of the podcast. Thanks to him for having me on Hot Takes at QED Astoria in Astoria, New York, Astoria, Queens. I had a good time. It's not Hot Takes. It's Strong Takes. I don't know if I said that before. It's Strong Takes, hosted by Pete Bladel. And because of that title, I had a bit that I was working on. And I was thinking, should I do it? I don't know. And I was like, don't be a pussy. Just start off, do the joke that you're going to do, because the show is called Strong Takes. Have a strong take. See what happens. And it went pretty good. So I had fun doing that. And afterwards, I met up with my buddy Scott Stangland, friend of the podcast also. And we went, hung out, had a sit down. And it was a good time. And because it was a bar next door to QED Astoria, which is a very nice venue. It's relatively new. I think, I don't know if it's even been open a year or not. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but it's a cafe, and it's basically called QED, a place to show and tell. So they've had a lot of comedy shows, and I'm assuming they do poetry readings. They teach classes. They do a lot of cool shit. So if you're in that area, stop by, see a show, have a good time. It's really neat. So hung out with my buddy Scott. He met me after the show. We just went around the corner to some bar and hung out. And then a guy tapped me on the shoulder, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And I was like, "What, yo?" And it was Phil Provencio, another friend of the podcast. So I mentioned three friends of the podcast in the first 10 minutes of this episode, and it was great seeing him. I hadn't seen him in a minute. Gave him a hug, caught up with him. He was with his girlfriend, and yeah, man. So it was good. It was a really good Friday night, and good times. Then Saturday, I was booked to do some. Wow, what is wrong? I did vocal warm-ups before I started, and I am sorry for that mishap, you guys. I apologize. I was scheduled to do some shows in Poughkeepsie, New York at Carmine's Comedy Club, which is located in Poughkeepsie, Dutchess County, and it's in this... It's really cool. It's in this Italian restaurant called Umberto's, and it's a nice Italian restaurant. I didn't eat there, but it looked nice. It looked like people were eating and having a good time. So that's all I can. That's, you know, hey, that's it. It is what it is. And then they had this back room, like a dining hall. It's essentially a dining hall, and it was beautiful. It was really nice. They had the tables out, and I did two shows there. I opened for comedian Richie Byrne, and I did a half hour on both shows. The first show was good. It was an early show. It was around 7 o'clock, and it was about 25 people or so. It was a light crowd, but I had fun. I kind of talked to them up top a little bit. I was talking to them about just the drive. I'm in love with upstate New York. I think I've had this love affair with upstate New York for about 2 years now, and even more so, even more so since I've been going up there. I went up there a couple of times this year, and I guess you could consider that upstate New York. Hell, it's an hour and change. It's an hour away from the city, from where I live at least. What's Mike Spears's room? It's, what is that town? Oh my God. Saugerties, thank God. I hate when I can't remember. Saugerties, New York. I did that about 2 years ago, and that was my first time up there, and it was just beautiful, just the old houses, the towns and stuff. And so last week, last Saturday, I drove up there, just gave myself a lot of time, and just took my time, and I drove up, basically driving up 87. Is that 87 or 287? Whatever. You're driving up, and I went through Fishkill, New York, and that was the only, I think that may have been the only town that I really drove through during the day while there was light out, and got to see like the little shops around, and just really beautiful. I'm in love with that area, just being away from the city, and it's just really beautiful. I'm in love with nature, the upstate New York, all that. It was beautiful. Good times. And I just kind of felt like it just felt a little weird. I didn't bomb. I know I didn't bomb because I got laughs and people were into me. It just didn't feel right. There was a black guy in there was a black guy in the front, and there was a black guy there, and it looked like he was judging me, but then I was doing through my set, I just was scanning the room, and I looked at him, and he was smiling, he was into it, but I just felt like, oh my God, this guy, he doesn't think I'm funny, what the fuck. Sometimes you zero in on a person, kind of, and it's just like, oh my God, this guy. But this set ended up being fine. I just didn't feel good about it. I was just like, it's like I did my job, but I wanted to kill a little harder with the stuff that I was doing. And then I kind of fucked up because I don't know if I fucked up, but I saw something on Facebook that annoyed me, and I don't know who listens to the show, which if they listen to it, but because I'm going to probably still talk about it on stage, but I was like, I got to talk about this on stage. And I talked about it, brought it back a little bit, and then got the show, because it was going to head off the rails, but I got it back on track, and I salvaged what I needed to salvage. But so I was one for two on Saturday, but it was good to have, that's my assessment. I would give myself an A- on the first show, B minus on the second show. No. Yeah, B minus on the second show. Yeah. And, yeah. Yeah, you guys. Keeping it real with you. But overall, like, it was just, it was really cool to go do two long sets. I did an hour of stage work on Saturday. So that it was something that I needed because I got, a show coming up in Connecticut where I'm at the Castle Bar and Grill. I should have opened, you know what? Now that I've said something about it, now that I've mentioned some shows, I'll give you some plugs and I'll open it up on my phone because I think it's better for me to open up on the phone because it's quicker. I went back from British to American right there, and I thought it was going to be quicker. So let's see what we got here. So April 14th, my dad's birthday. Happy birthday, Dad. I already sent you your card and some stuff, so I don't feel guilty about not being there. I love you. April 14th, I'll be at Kings County Saloon in Brooklyn at 9 o'clock p.m. April 16th, I'll be at the Grizzly Pear. Kings County Saloon's in Brooklyn that's at 9 o'clock. April 16th, I'll be at the Grizzly Pear in New York City. 8 o'clock, Castle Bar and Grill, Stamford, Connecticut at 8 p.m. I'm doing a long set there. I think I'm doing like a half hour there, and I'm headlining that show. It should be fun. If you live in Stamford, Connecticut, and you like my comedy or you like this podcast, come see me. You can come see me, because I need you here with me, and I'll show you what love is made of. Later on, if you are free, baby, you can come see me. And remember Slim on 112? But it worked. It worked for 112, that guy, Slim. Why is there's not really any R&B. Is there any R&B out there like it was in the 90s? Like, it's just not there. Like, the 90s in the early to mid 2000s. Like, for a 15-year stretch, there was some good tunes out there. There's nothing left to the imagination. It's like, I wanna fuck, I'm gonna fuck, and I'ma fuck you. And it's not, can we finesse the panties off, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old. Maybe it's old. I don't know, you guys. Maybe that's a sign of me aging. It is what it is. So, and there are more shows. I've got some more shows in April. I'm rambling a little bit too much. I'm going to be at Steel Stacks in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, opening for the great Carmen Lynch, friend of the podcast. So I'm really excited to be working with her again. I've done shows with her. I've done spots with Carmen, but never like on a two-hander's, like when there's just like two comics, opener and the headliner. This past weekend, opening for Richie Byrne, I went on stage, and then I went on stage cold both times. Like, it was just like the manager of the club was like, hey, thanks guys for coming. It's going to be a good show. Your first comic. He's got this podcast that he pronounced wrong. And he was on this TV show that no one's ever heard about, Chris Lamberth. And I went up there, you guys. And I, you know, it is so. Yes. Okay. So that was comedy last week. And it was fun. I felt like there was some growth. And, yeah, man. Good stuff. And Sunday, I went to the movies. We'll get into that. So when I was hanging out with Scott on Friday, he mentioned to me, he said, oh, my friend, I got a friend that I'm in playing in a band for her on Sunday at the Bowery Poetry Club. And he's like, come through. I'll get you on the list. And I was like, all right. I'll go. So I Sunday afternoon, I drove down, went to the movies, and which I said I was going to talk to you about a little later. And I went to see Scott in this band, and his friend Katrina Link, her stage name when she performs is Moxie Finks, and she's a singer, multi-instrumentalist, and she had like a seven-piece band, and she was great. Like, I took a picture of her on of her in performance, so I'm gonna put it on my Instagram. And she had two girls on violin. Scott played the accordion and the piano. A guy on drums and a guy with the same guy did percussion, like he was banging on a box, and that was cool. And then like there was a dude on the laptop, like, cause I think she normally does stuff with Pro Tools, but she composes her music on her laptop, and yeah, it was really cool. Like she on her, I'm going to her website. She says they call it, like, her style is theatrical pop rock is what she calls it. So she's a songwriter, arranger, producer, vocal, strings, etc. She's really cool. Like, she's got a great voice, and it was just so much fun. I didn't look her up before. I just said, I'm supporting my buddy. I don't know what the fuck is going to happen. I'm just going to be an observer. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was awesome. And yeah, it was so much fun. And I had never gone to the Bowery Poetry Club, but I remember, like, right around the time when I was first doing comedy, I remember they used to have open mics, and Victor Varnado and I think Diane O'Debra used to run that, and they used to stream it online, and I used to watch it sometimes. It would just be super late that I had to go to work the next day, and I never got around to going to that. But it's on, I guess you consider that the Lower East Side. It's either the Lower East Side or it's not really the East Village. I'll say Lower East Side. And so I walk in there, and I'm like, it's really nice. It's beautiful. It's like kind of like sort of reminded me of a Wes Anderson movie. I know everybody hates on Wes Anderson now. I was like, what the fuck? The guy's been around for like almost 20 years, and now you're hating on him because you don't like hipsters anymore. You don't like hipsters now. I don't fucking know. I think he's got some joints. I think he's, yeah, if you dig into the archives of JL Covan's Righteous Prick podcast, you can hear me debate JL on Wes Anderson. He hates Wes Anderson. I like him. I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of his work. So anyway, it was really nice and swanky, really cool spot. And I would say definitely go there if you're in the New York area, you know, when you want to see some music. They have all kinds, I'm sure they have all kinds of stuff going on, but I think now they kind of call it the Bowery Arts and Science Center or something like that. And she did about an hour. And hung out with them after the show. Really cool people. Quite a few of them were in Once the Musical. And if you're a fan of the show and you've been listening at least since the late episode 70, the 70s and 80s, you'll remember that I went to see Scott in that show, and Scott was on the podcast, and just all these super talented people. And it kind of did have that vibe. I think that was the first time that she had done the show with live instrumentation. And it was really neat. Like, that's one of my, because a lot of singer songwriters now, they make a lot of their shit on Pro Tools, on their computer thingies, on their laptops. like St. Vincent made her first album, Marry Me, pretty much with Pro Tools in her mom's house, in her childhood bedroom in 2006, 2007. And now she's a Grammy winner. And I love you, Annie Clark. Yeah, so, you know, but to me, it's always, I'm just a fan of live music. And I like seeing really talented people doing what they do in front of me. And it's just always, it's always really cool. And it's inspiring to see. And yeah, man, it was really fun. I saw some people out, man, people that I knew. So it was a really good weekend. I got in at 3:30 this morning, and I don't know, my day might be thrown off. I gotta get my shit together, because I need to do laundry. You ever feel like, you know you need to do laundry, and you're like, you gotta do shopping and just grocery store shopping. It's just, oh my god, you guys. Oh, my life, this cross that I bear. Oh, woe is me. Oh my god. So when I got into the city, I parked around like the Union Square. Yeah, Union Square area. And I walked over a few minutes to, I went to the Regal Cinema. Okay, you know, we'll do this. We'll talk about movies now. I went to see Ex Machina. And I was really excited to see this movie. I didn't know if I was going to be able to see it this weekend. And when Scott told me about the show, I was like, all right, cool. And I just started looking at the movie. When Ex Machina is only playing in the city, it's only playing in four theaters, two in New York, and I think maybe two in LA, which gives you a total of four. And it's essentially this movie about this programmer that wins this company-wide contest to meet his boss in a secluded place to test out some AI, some artificial intelligence. And it's a house. Let me get to the, because I want to give you, you know how I do. I want to break this down, but I want to give you a nice clean breakdown of the movie before I get into it. I'll read this here. A young coder at the world's largest internet company wins a competition to spend a week at a private retreat belonging to the reclusive CEO of the company. On arrival, he learns that he must participate in a bizarre experiment which involves interacting with the world's first true artificial intelligence, which comes in the form of a beautiful female robot. And it's a series, it's called a Turing test, and it's basically to see if an AI is legit or not. It's the same thing that The Imitation Game was based on, was about, the real life story. The Turing test is a test of a machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior equivalent to or indistinguishable from that of a human. So, and it stars Domhnall Gleeson, Alicia Vikander, and Oscar Isaac. And now, Oscar Isaac is a guy that's come up a lot on the podcast recently. This motherfucker is a beast. Like, he's a really good actor, and he's working his way up there to being like just one of the best of his generation. Like, I saw him, the first time I had ever heard of him was seeing him in Inside Llewyn Davis, and he was the lead. He was Llewyn Davis, and he's just awesome. And he's, let's see, they say he's a Guatemalan-born American actor and singer, known for his lead roles in Inside Llewyn Davis, for which he received a Golden Globe Award nomination, A Most Violent Year, and Ex Machina. He will star in the upcoming film Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and X-Men Apocalypse. So that's two franchises that he's going to, two huge franchises that he's going to be a part of and is going to probably take him to the next level. We're going to talk about that also. But A Most Violent Year, to me, one of my favorite movies of last year. A lot of people didn't like that movie because I know that they were like, oh, violence, motherfuckers going to be dying. It's going to be on some gangster shit. And I may have said this before. I probably said this a couple of months ago. That movie is an origin story for a gangster. It's the possible origin story because there's things that happen in that movie. I mean, you see growth. You see that there's growth. Somebody said, what is it? Comedian, Ken Krantz, New York, Jersey comedian, says something on Facebook like, yeah, this movie's kind of like he said it was boring, but it's just like really, it's not even violent. It's just a dude asking for loans. And I mean, if you break it down to its bare essentials, you break it down to the LCD, the lowest common denominator, whatever the fuck, you break this joint down. And, he is just kind of asking for loans for the whole movie. But it's more to it than that, man. I really dug it. I think there's a lot of nuance and a lot of subtlety involved in the movie. I'm sort of, and I've said this maybe a week or two ago, I'm just really into origin stories. You know, like when I have guests on the show, I like to hear where they come from and how they came to be the people that they are. Especially when you're any type of artist, you're not on a set path, you know. So that always interests me. But Oscar Isaac, this guy is really good. I have a man crush on him. Move over Michael B. Jordan, because this Guatemalan and Cuban guy, hubba hubba. No, he's a fucking beast. I was watching, so he plays this, the CEO of this company called Blue Book, and it's the world's largest internet search engine, kind of like a Google / Facebook type thing. And he's kind of like a hipster bro, cool guy, but you know there's some shit going on. And it all starts out pretty neat, but there's tension throughout the whole movie. And one of the good things that I like about this, and I mentioned to you guys a movie a couple weeks ago called Hard Candy with Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson, how that movie kind of aesthetically and technically in a way came across like a play, like a stage play. You're in this confined space and you just have these actors interacting with each other for most of the whole time. It's almost like a bottle episode, which Community made fun of, where it's like they were all just in the live. If you're a fan of Community, they were all, there's this one episode where they were just in the study hall, the library, and the whole episode essentially took place there. Stuff like that. And then I think they did a Halloween episode like that. But anyway, it was really good. I wouldn't call myself a big science fiction guy, but the guy that wrote and directed it, Alex Garland, who wrote 28 Days Later, he wrote this movie called Sunshine, which is really good. I think that may have been the last movie that I saw before I moved out back east. And Sunshine's also very good. 28 Weeks Later, he was the EP. He was a executive producer. What else did he? And then he did this movie called Never Let Me Go, which was good too. What's the Spider-Man guy? The newest Spider-Man guy. Jesus Christ, what is going on with you? Andrew Garfield, right? Yeah. So Carey Mulligan, Keira Knightley, and Andrew Garfield, they were in it. And that's another good movie. And it makes me want to go back and watch his other stuff. Because all three of those movies kind of have a theme to it. At least Ex Machina, Never Let Me Go, and Sunshine. Mainly Sunshine and Ex Machina have this Icarus, too close to the sun type themes going on. And it's more blatant in Sunshine because I think there's a spaceship. Sunshine's basically about this crew of astronauts that try to ignite the sun, ignite light back into the sun. Because the sun's died out, and they inject some nuclear bomb into the sun to make it go, and all this shit happens. And the name of this shuttle, the name of the spaceship, is called the Icarus. So I mean, an Icarus is the tale of a you guys know what Icarus is, a little boy flying really high, and he has wings made of like wax or something, and he gets too close to the sun and the wings melt and he falls flat to the ground. I'm gonna read it. Let's see if I can let's look it up. I don't want to just make some of these bold statements and then just did not sound right. Yeah, I'm right. This is too long. But basically his dad made him these wings, and where the fuck is it? Okay. Here we go. Daedalus was Icarus's dad. So Daedalus fashioned two pairs of wings out of wax and feathers for himself and his son. Daedalus tried his wings first, but before taking off from the island, warned his son not to fly too close to the sun, nor too close to the sea, but follow his path of flight. Overcome by the giddiness that flying lent him, Icarus soared into the sky, but in the process he came too close to the sun, which due to the heat melted the wax. Icarus kept flapping his wings, but soon realized that he had no feathers left and that he was only flapping his bare arms, and so Icarus fell into the sea in the area which today bears his name, the Icarian Sea, near Icaria and islands of southwest of Samos. Anyway, so that's basically what that was. And he died because he didn't listen to his daddy and he flew too close to the sun. And I think those are definitely, like, there's themes to where it's like, yeah, you may be really smart and you may really be doing this cool shit, but it might end up biting you in the ass. It might just end up biting you in the ass, and you will pay for trying to be godlike. And those are the themes in the movie. And I kind of fucked up by reading the Wikipedia plot summary before I saw Ex Machina. And I didn't, because I was excited to see it. And I think I'm trying to remember when I heard about this movie. I think I may have read something about it, and then I saw a trailer before a movie. It might have, you know what? It was in January, and I went to go see A Most Violent Year. And I was at the Bowtie Cinemas in New City, New York. And I went, one of my favorite little movie, that's my, one of my favorite movie chains. I went to go see that movie, and the Ex Machina trailer came on. I was like, oh shit, this shit looks official. Oscar Isaac is in this shit. And, yeah. And I was just fascinated by this movie. So that's been like 3 months ago. So when I knew it was opening this weekend, I was like, ah, am I going to be in, you know, I'm going to, you know, am I going to have to wait 2 or 3 weeks for it to get to Jersey in order to see it? And just, so I saw it and I was just like, ah, fuck, I'll read the plot summary. I actually read it twice because I think I may have read it like earlier in the year. And then when I started reading so much shit about it, I read it again and I was like, fuck. But it didn't take away from me enjoying the movie because I was like, how is this shit going to happen? There was tension throughout most of it. And there was this one scene that was just, it was almost out of, it was, it on the surface, it looked like it would be out of place, but it really wasn't. And it fit. It was like, holy shit, they did this thing. And it was like, I was just like, wow, I don't want to spoil anything for you. But if you've ever listened to any of my recommendations, I would say check this shit out and let me know what you think. It's it was pretty suspenseful even when I knew what was going to happen. It was almost a matter of how it would happen as opposed to what's going to happen next. You know, for me, for someone that has, knew about the plot and everything. But it was really good. All the actors were good. This girl, what's her name? Alicia Vikander. Where is she from? She's Swedish. And I think she's going to be in some... She's probably going to be in some American shit coming up. But she was really good. She's pretty. And Domhnall Gleeson was in... what else? He was in About Time, which I really liked. And I think it was he in like a Harry Potter movie or some shit? Yeah, he was in the Harry Potters, right? Yep. He was at least in... He was in Never Let Me Go. Oh, see, there you go. It was in True Grit. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1 and 2. Harry Potter and the Escape from the Gringo. Oh, that's a theme park. He played Bill Weasley. So is that Ron Weasley's brother? I haven't read. I only saw one of the Harry Potter movies and... played the Quidditch video game that EA Sports made. So he's going to be in, and he's going to be in Star Wars also. Yeah, he was good. Like About Time was the last thing that I remember seeing him in. And, he was in Calvary too. Oh shit. I saw that. I vaguely remember what he did in that, but About Time is like one of those like movies. You see it and it makes you want to call your dad or whoever your father figure is. It's like, Dad. Yeah, man. I really liked Ex Machina. I would say it's one of my favorite films of the year so far. I've seen a few, but I say this one's up there. If it's not number one, it's pretty much up there. This year's been kind of slow, and I just got the summer movie preview Entertainment Weekly edition, and. Speaking of that, I'm going to try to figure it. J.L. Covan has mentioned on his podcast, The Righteous Prick, that he wants to have me on the show. Like he announces my guest appearances before even talking to me about it. And I usually will I will do it, but it's just like he just announces it. And then makes plans later. So I'll hopefully within the next couple of weeks, I'll get on there with JL and we'll do a summer movie preview. It's always a good time with podcasting with that bloke. So yeah, Ex Machina, really check this out. And then it's beautifully shot. Where did they shoot this movie at? Let me see if it's on. Usually Wikipedia doesn't. Okay, it was filmed in Norway. The location for the film is an actual hotel Juve Landscape Hotel in Vladen, Norway. Okay. And beautiful scenery, like in the mountains, waterfalls and shit. It was really cool. And technical, like the way Ava was created, like you could see like her, you could see her insides, the machinery working, and there were these like little whirs and buzzes going on, like when she would move, and so it was really cool, technically sound, shot really well, awesome. Okay, so that was a move. Did I see anything else? I started watching Daredevil, and everybody was going apeshit over this. It came out, it premiered Friday, and all the nerds on Facebook and Twitter were just enamored by this show. And I'm not a big superhero fan. But I get why people like it. I'm not shitting on anybody for liking what they like. I'm really excited to see it, the Avengers. The first one was really fun. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Thor. I'm not against it, or I don't know about the comics and all that stuff, but I just know, I know a good movie when I see one, guys. So I was like, all right. Yesterday before I went out, I watched the first episode, and I was like, the first person that he beats up is this black dude. He beats the shit out of this black dude. And I was like, man, fuck this shit, man. Hashtag black actors. And I was mad. And but he, even though that black guy was a human trafficker, I was still mad that he just beat the shit out of this guy. So it is good. And Rosario Dawson's in it. So I'm going to keep watching. And I actually got to the second, maybe halfway through the second episode before I had to leave. And it's a solid show. It's fine. And if all the nerds approve, then not to say that I'm going to follow suit, but if all the nerds like it, then I'm guessing that the show's doing its job. It's appealing and appeasing to the comic book folk. So that's good. Right? Right, you guys? Right? And like I told you before, I got an email. Got an email from the homie Michael Felder. And let's read it. I'm just going to read the whole thing, and then I will give you my thoughts on it. And the title of the message, the email, is Not that many movie stars? ? Here we go. Listening to the show on the plane home from vacation, thank you, and you keep saying there aren't that many movie stars. So I started thinking about relatively younger people, not Denzel, Meryl, who are doing work. Even without McConaughey and DiCaprio, there are a bunch of names out there. Also didn't include Elizabeth Olsen or Chloe Grace Moretz because I don't think they have box office power the way the other names do. Oh, and I forgot Jeremy Renner because I don't know where he goes, but he's the new born and is in Avengers. Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Shailene Woodley, Jennifer Lawrence, Scarlett Johansson, Chris Evans, Christian Bale, Robert Downey Jr., Channing Tatum, McConaughey, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jake Gyllenhaal, Zac Efron, Chadwick Boseman is becoming a true star. Anne Hathaway, Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Michael Fassbender, Chris Hemsworth, Charlie Hunnam is a name that started on TV but blew up in Pacific Rim. Idris Elba in general, Daniel Craig is damn James Bond. Michael Peña is on the come up as well. I gotta disagree with missing movie stars in general. The point on McAdams, this was in response to the Rachel McAdams article I talked about. The point on McAdams and Amy Adams in the same time period is that movies they would have been strong leads in were not being made at the height of their rise. Instead, they had to play secondary, often meek characters, hoping to be saved by a strong man or needing a man in general. Adams finally had a breakout role that was not nearly as acknowledged, but as it should be, with big eyes in 2014. Not true. Breakout was Junebug in 2005. She finally got to play a strong female lead, but it took her growing from the desirable sexy lady into the mom range. Big Eyes was easily one of my top 5-6 movies from last year. Christoph Waltz was good in it, but she was a revelation. Not really. She's already a star, especially due to the weak roles we're used to seeing her portray. Hell, I'd throw Rose Byrne into that category as well. Great on Damages, the TV show. She was very assertive, but was and also ran in a lot of the movie roles has the talent to lead. Oh, and I totally forgot Mark Wahlberg. Is he not a star? Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, all allowed to flourish as McAdams were becoming popular because of the roles on the table for them. Born Identity, The Departed were movies that literally needed no women. Hell, I love Vera Farmiga, but she isn't central to The Departed. Owen and Luke Wilson, stars or not? That mid-2000s frat boy boom with Wedding Crashers, Old School, 40-Year-Old Virgin, which turned Paul Rudd and Seth Rogen into mainstays, was very good for men. Meanwhile, strong female roles were a rarity. So I think the article had a good point. Also, I figured I'd email you so you don't get scammed by a Nigerian prince. See you in a couple weeks, dude. That's right, he's coming into town. Oh, and I totally disagree on spoilers. I want them. They make me more in tune to what's going on in a movie and allow me to appreciate performances. I hate surprises, and so if I'm in the dark at a movie, I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what happens next. When I know everything that happens, I can watch performances and character work. So spoilers help me out. Later, Gator Felder. All right. Thanks for the email, Felder. Thanks for the email, Felder. Thanks for the email, Mike. So there's quite a few things to unpack here. We did talk about how Denzel, last week I talked about how you had people like bankable movie stars like Denzel, Meryl Streep, Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts for a stretch. And like, those are what you call movie stars. Those people that have become famous. They're famous for being the leads and in a movie and being box office mainstays. Like, whenever, every time you see them headline a movie, we're talking box office numbers. Like, that's what these people are. Now, the next tier. Now, okay, so Elizabeth Olsen, Chloe Grace Moretz, they're not movie stars. They're very, very good, but they're not movie stars. Like, they're very talented, but they're not demanding high box office numbers. Elizabeth Olsen's first movie that I remember her from, her quote unquote breakout role, which made her a revelation to me and made me fall in love with her, was a movie called Martha, Marcy May, Marlene, which is a 2011 film where she plays a woman, a young woman that's escaping from a cult. And she has flashbacks about that. Really good movie. Well acted. I thought that she could have gotten an Oscar nom for Best Actress. Not a big budget movie. Not that many people saw it. While nerds like me who read the dissolve.com would be excited about that movie. It's not enough to for that movie to make $50 million in one weekend. Jeremy Renner, you know about Jeremy Renner because he did really well. The Hurt Locker, he got an Oscar nom for Hurt Locker. And what's the woman that directed that movie? She was the first female to win a lot. James Cameron's ex-wife. Oh my God, I hate when I can't remember this shit. Catherine Bigelow. 2009? Really? Wow. Yeah, that movie only made $11 million. Well, the budget was $11 million, and it was Oscar flick. Good movie. Also, somebody that got snubbed in that, Anthony Mackie. How did Jeremy Renner earn that Oscar? He wasn't acting against a green screen. He had Anthony Mackie in the movie. Very talented bloke. Very talented guy that doesn't get a lot of credit. So this next tier of people, and then when he did that Bourne movie, it kind of bombed. It flopped. He's not box office. He's a very good actor, not box office. Kill the Messenger, very good in it. It came out a little too early for him to get an Oscar nomination for it, but I did see that movie and he was very good in it, but it was just kind of like, it's almost like, what do you call that? Really not necessarily a vanity project, but just like a guy of his caliber, Oscar nominee. He got that movie made and I'm sure the budget wasn't that big for it, but very good actor. Okay. Now the next tier of people. Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Shailene Woodley, Jennifer Lawrence, Scarlett Johansson, Chris Evans, Christian Bale, Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. is a movie star. He headlined, top-lined Iron Man. Like, was Iron Man his comeback? I feel like Iron Man was his comeback movie. I want to say it was. Do I want to go down a rabbit hole and make this podcast like 2.5 hours? I don't know. We'll see what happens. I owe you guys a little more time, but I want to look at his IMDb, but that made him bankable and it put him back on the, I put him back on the map, I feel like. And he got the nom. He got the nom for Tropic Thunder. Let's see. Because The Soloist came out. Yeah, Iron Man was 2008. Yep. He was good in Zodiac. Mm-hmm. I'd say I'm right. As far as a big budget movie is concerned, Iron Man came out in 2008 and he did the video game that was pretty, the video game was pretty fun, but it got kind of redundant. It was pretty cool. You play Iron Man and you're in like this 360 degree environment. And that was pretty fun. Anyway, Tropic Thunder. Got a nom for that. The Soloist, I think he may have gotten a nom. That was like was still indie. That was him and Jamie Foxx. Yeah, man. So he's a movie star. He's a movie star. And we're talking about dudes, but that's who I'm going through, the people he put. So he's a star. Chris Evans, Captain America. It's almost like, if Chris Evans, let's see, he's Captain America, but it's a franchise. It's a movie franchise. It's a superhero movie. Now I would say, yeah, he's probably gonna, if he does something else, will people go see Chris Evans if he's not playing Captain America? That's why I would put him, I would kind of put him on the fence. Let's see. What else is he? You kind of got to give it to him, though. You got to give it to him. I feel like you got to give it to him. Are people going to see his other shit? Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer was fine. It was solid. Might have been a little overrated. He was in Sunshine. Bringing it back to Alex Garden. That's right. Alex Gardner. Right? What the fuck was his name? Jesus Christ. Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. You can do this. Alex Garland. There we go. I almost feel like it's yet to be seen, but I mean, you gotta think, if people are gonna go see him as Captain America, will they go see him in something else where he's not in a uniform, in Captain America uniform? I don't know. That's pretty close. I like Chris Evans though. Scarlett Johansson, kind of the same thing. I like her. She's hot. Did anybody go see the movie where she was eating dudes or killing dudes? That last movie she was in this skin? I haven't seen it yet. I heard it was pretty weird. Christian Bale, Dark Knight. I mean, he's Batman now. I mean, he was in a Terminator movie. He's a movie star. So that's a dude. McConaughey's a movie star. DiCaprio, of course. Gyllenhaal. Ooh, Gyllenhaal's just kind of like a character actor guy, leading man looks. Leading man looks, character actor guy. Zac Efron. Not a movie star. Couldn't open. The Neighbors did. Did The Neighbors do well? But that was Seth Rogen. That was more Seth Rogen than him. The High School Musical movies. But like, they've been trying to get him to open with these adult movies. 17 Again, good movie. I remember one time my cousin, he's 36. My cousin will be 37 this year. And so about 3 or 4 years ago, whenever 17 Again was out, I remember waking up in the middle of the night and just saw that I got a text, and it was my cousin that was like, Zac Efron's so good in fucking 17 Again. I was like, all right, man. And he wasn't lying. He was. I like Zac Efron a lot, but it just seems like the push that they were making for him, it didn't happen with the movie that he was in with Miles Teller. What the fuck? With the stupid, that awkward moment. Yeah. Which was a good movie, but it didn't sell. He was the lead in that. And it didn't do the numbers that they wanted it to do. And so they kind of been on the fence about him. But I do like him. He was in this movie called The Lucky One that was pretty cool. I like that. Was it one of those Nicholas Sparks movies? I think it was. Yeah, Channing Tatum's a star. They're making another Magic Mike. That motherfucker's a star. The 21 Jump Street movies. Yeah. Ah! Huh. Yeah, I mean, they're going to be making these movies for these dudes. And that, I mean, that's, like he said, like, that was essentially the point of the article. Like, so we're just taking these guys. He mentions Chadwick Boseman. When he does that Black Panther movie, that might propel him into another level. Same for a guy like Oscar Isaac, that if he does these X-Men movies, I think now maybe more and more people will know who he is, and the Star Wars. Boseman is just, he's a good actor. The James Brown movie didn't do that well. Even he was good in it. The script wasn't that great. It's kind of like a paint-by-numbers biopic. Anne Hathaway, movie star. He mentioned Chris Pratt. We'll see. Well, see, like a guy like Chris Pratt, I like him, but he's. Well, fuck it. Yeah, I guess because he's one of the leads in Guardians of the Galaxy, so he's gonna be looked at as a star. He's gonna be in the new Jurassic World movie, Fassbender. Kind of like the same thing. Charlie Hunnam and Idris Elba were in. Were they both in Charlie Hunnam in Pacific Rim? Daniel Craig's a movie star, franchise guy. Idris Elba should be a movie star, but he's not. He's a fucking beast. He just hasn't had. I don't think he's had any really any. The best thing that he's ever done was Luther. That's the best thing he's ever done, and they're making a season four of that. I don't know why people are so obsessed with this guy playing fucking James Bond. Who gives a shit? Get some good writers, a good director, and make a good original fucking movie and have him in it. And he'll kill. Luther is he's fantastic on that show. He's great. He doesn't need James Bond. He doesn't need to be in that shit. Why can't there be a black? And I kind of feel on the side of the white people. We don't need it. I'm with Yaphet, and I'm with Yaphet Kotto. We don't need a black James Bond. Make your own. Damn, that sounds fucked up. I don't think we need that shit. I don't get it. Somebody just let him not do that bullshit movie that he did with fucking, what's the name of that movie? The stupid ass movie, No Good Deed, with Taraji Henson, that dumbass. Stupid shit. You're going to make that movie in Obama's America. A big, brutish black dude killing Leslie Bibb. How dare you, Idris? How dare you kill Leslie Bibb, a delicate white angel? And you just going to kill her? And you're going to try to kill Taraji? Is you crazy? Nigga, is you crazy? What? All right. Okay. So we go on to the McAdams and Amy Adams. Now, this is where I would say that I didn't agree with the article, because I was talking to Scott out there. Amy, we're talking about Rachel McAdams. The point, I think the whole point of the article is they don't get to choose scenery like these dudes get to do. And that's very true. They don't get to do, they get to do it, but they don't get to do it on a large scale. They do these really small independent movies that are really good. Like I mentioned, Elizabeth Olsen in Martha, Marcy May, Marlene. She was in some movie about some girls, like her and Dakota Fan. That was like kind of blah. It was aight. But, So Rachel McAdams, she does The Hot Chick with Rob Schneider. She's in that. But then she breaks out. She's Regina George in Mean Girls. That's a really good role for her. And she had a lot of nuance in it. And that was the most compelling character in that movie. Lindsay Lohan was hot and she did her thing. She got busy. But when you look at it, that's Rachel McAdams's like movie. Like that's her shit. Cause she has the most, usually the villains have more fun anyway. I mean, you could see the character of Katie Heron played by Lindsay Lohan. You could see that there was nuance, and she was like on the verge of losing her friends that she made and all that shit that happens in a high school movie like that. But that was a big turn for her. Then she did The Notebook, and it like that was a, like the article said, that's a generational romantic film. And then after that, it was pretty much, I mean, Wedding Crashers, she was the girl. The Family Stone is an ensemble film. Red Eye, she was the lead in, right? I want to say she was. I think that's one of few. Yeah, she's the lead of that movie with Cillian Murphy. I remember that being pretty good. I have it on DVD. I gotta pull that one back out and watch it. Time Traveler's Wife, she was the lead. And Morning Glory, Midnight in Paris, I think she was an asshole in that. The Vow. So that was more Channing Tatum than her, I think. And it was just for the... And then Aloha, I think that's... She's the one of the girls, one of the women that Bradley Cooper fucked or used to fuck in Aloha. But I'm excited about that movie. That looks really good. Yeah, she hasn't. It's just opportunities for her to really shine, haven't been there. And she is around these dudes, like movies with all these dudes. And I think, and True Detective, the way that I think it was Scott Mendelson, the way that he made it sound, he made it sound like, oh, she's just relegated to being the lead on an HBO show that was already a hit. And both of the lead actors got Golden Globe noms. I guess she's going to be relegated to being on that high profile show. I mean, I don't feel bad for her at all, because I think she's very talented and she'll be fine. What else do we have here? So, and then we go to Amy Adams. Let's try to break down a little bit about Amy Adams. Let's see. So, Amy Adams, do I have her IMDb page open? I want to say that I do, but I don't. Let's see here. Amy Adams. I think her first movie was Drop Dead Gorgeous, which is a fucking hilarious film. Let's see. Amy Adams. I'm waiting for my computer to load up and catch up to what I want to do. All right. So they got the TV and stuff mixed in here. But Drop Dead Gorgeous is her first credit. Sidebar. One of my friends that I went to, I was in conservatory with, did dinner theater with her in Colorado. So her first thing was Drop Dead Gorgeous, and she played a supporting character in that. And then there was a lot of TV. There's some TV guest spots. She was on Smallville, like guest spots on TV shows and stuff. Cruel Intentions 2, straight to video. Some small roles here and there. Did some voices on King of the Hill. She was on Dr. Vegas. And then Junebug 2005 was the breakout. That's Felder when she was the revelation. Because I remember seeing that movie. And I may have talked about it briefly, but I remember seeing that movie. And I remember like, wow, this chick, this girl is amazing. She's adorable. She's heartbreaking. She's beautiful. She's really sweet. And it was really, 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 really good. This is a... Okay, so the movie's it's about a dealer, an art dealer, in outsider art, and quote-unquote outsider art, travels from Chicago to North Carolina to meet her new in-laws, challenging the equilibrium of this middle class southern home. And it's just this really like laid back indie movie filmed in North Carolina, I think like the Winston-Salem area, if I remember. This movie's 10 years old. I really liked it. She was the shit. Like, she was in this movie, and she was great. And that movie put her on the path to do what she's doing now. And okay, so let's look at, so Junebug comes out. She's on the wedding date with what's her name. She's on the TV show. Deborah Messing. And she was the sister. She played Deborah Messing's sister. She played Deborah Messing's sister. Pretty wedding date. Pretty good movie, actually. A little rom-com. Catch Me If You Can't. Like, you know, just kind of like little supporting roles and all that shit. Let's see. Talladega Nights. She was the girl. She was the girl in that. Sunshine Cleaning. She was the lead in that. I remember that. Doubt. She was, you know, Julie and Julia. Leap Year. Underrated romantic comedy. One of the most underrated romantic comedies ever. And when I say ever, I mean ever. And then they got, let's see, they got her Oscar, like a lot of her critically acclaimed. Did I list of awards and the nominations? Okay, so she got a nom for Junebug, Doubt, The Fighter, The Master, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Actress for American Hustle. So she's gotten some joints. I mean, she lost to Rachel Weisz, who's another one that who I really love. She lost to she lost to some people that are heavyweights, like Rachel Weisz, Penelope Cruz, and Vicky Cristina Barcelona. The Fighter, Melissa Leo won for that. And the 2012, I didn't see Les Mis. She lost to Anne Hathaway, and she got nominated for The Master, and she kind of wasn't really, she was in it for a little bit. She had one scene where she was telling Philip Seymour Hoffman to basically get your shit together. And I think that's the scene that did it for her. Cause it only takes that one scene to snag the award. So she's got five Oscar noms, five BAFTA award noms, and two Golden Globes. She won for American Hustle and for Big Eyes. And Big Eyes, that was like a small movie that I think the studio was trying to, it's like, we're trying to go for the Oscar, but we really, you know, we just going to put it out there in December to see if we can get a little burn. Yeah. And it made me think, like, I really pondered this email that Felder sent to me. And I listened back a little bit to that episode last week. And I was thinking, I kind of didn't have all my thoughts in order, but usually for the last 15 years, what I've noticed is that you get an actress, you get a young, pretty actress, and I'll take you through Katie Holmes's career, like where it started and where it ended up. This is what I'll do. So what they usually do, you get this pretty actress. She's on a TV show. Let's say she's on Dawson's Creek. Oh, let's see if she's bankable. She did an indie movie. She did The Ice Storm in 1997. She was a love interest for Tobey Maguire's character, Libbets Casey. And he was in love with this girl, as he obviously should have been in love with, because it's Katie Holmes. Ice Storm, that's an ensemble film with Kevin Kline, Joan Allen, Sigourney Weaver, and Tobey Maguire, Elijah Wood. She's not first on the call sheet. 1997, 1998, she does that probably right before Dawson's Creek. Dawson's Creek is a hit. All of them are killing it, and that's when a lot of them did these movies. She comes out with Disturbing Behavior, which is like a horror genre, horror movie. They put you in a horror movie. They put the pretty white girl in a horror movie, see if she could do her thing, get busy, and then they try to make her a star. Katie Holmes did, after that, she did Go, which is a good movie, sort of like a Pulp Fiction for early 20-year-olds, which was really good. I remember I was so obsessed with Katie Holmes that when my friends, I remember this specifically. I was in college. I was in undergrad at Mount St. Mary's. You would go to Frederick, Maryland, which was the city, and you go to the movies, go to out to eat, all that cool shit. I had a set of friends that went to go see The Matrix, and I went to go see Go, and I still think Go is better than The Matrix. Sorry, guys. So that was 1999. Then she's the lead in Teaching Mrs. Tingle. That's a Kevin Williamson movie. So that's kind of like with her and, oh my God. I can tell you who it is now. Helen Mirren. I didn't need that. Helen Mirren's in it. So she's the lead in that. And it was fine. And she continues to play like supporting characters in movies. Then they give her Abandoned 2002, where she's a lead. She's like a crazy person and ends up being like a fucking whack job. Like that's what her character is. I like that movie. Solid movie. The guy that wrote, I think his name is Steven Gagan, I want to say. He wrote Traffic. Fuck yeah, I'm right. Yeah, it was her, Benjamin Bratt, and Charlie Hunnam. There you go, Felder. 2002. Gabrielle Union was in that. I own that movie, too. The Gift, she was a supporting character. Showed her titties in that. You know, then they get to the point where they want to break out from their little TV role. They show their titties a little bit. She was in Phone Booth. I remember that. She was Colin Farrell's like girlfriend or something. Pieces of April, independent movie. She was the lead in that with Derek Luke, her black boyfriend. That was awesome. Then it's sort of like she did First Daughter. I don't think I ever saw that. That was in competition with a Mandy Moore movie where she also played the president's daughter or something. She was Rachel Dawes in Batman Begins. A lot of people hated her for that. And she was doing like supporting stuff and just like indie movies. And that's pretty much it. She was married to Tom Cruise and she fucked up there. And she had, she had some joints. Nothing really major. And the last thing I remember seeing her in was recently. I bought this movie on demand. She's in this movie called Miss Meadows, which she plays a substitute teacher in this small town in Ohio, and she kills bad guys on the side. This got 24% on Rotten Tomatoes. It wasn't that bad, man. Jesus Christ. It was all right. But it was just like one of these weird indie movies that she produced. I think she was the executive producer on this movie. She helped get it made. And it was just kind of like they just do these straight to video / on demand movies. If you don't hit on something that they don't see you as bankable, then they'll just put you in these movies that aren't big budgets. Or but if you're not a movie star, you still have money to do projects that you want to do. So, I mean, I guess that's the silver lining in it all. But that's usually what happens. Like you do, like even more recently with Elizabeth Olsen, she broke out with the indie role of Martha Marcy May Marlene. They put her in that movie that they did in Real Time. With the haunted house. Jesus Christ, man. Come on, Chris. Haunted house. Shit. I don't know. I'm going to find it, though. I'm going to find it for you guys. I'm going to get the... Oh, come on. I have so many tabs open right now. You see the work that I do for you in this podcast, you guys? I'm working so hard. I work so hard. Something House? What the fuck is the name of it? Silent House, right? I think it's Silent House. It's fucking slow ass. Silent House, yeah. Why don't they have? Okay. Yeah, so she actually, Martha Marcy May Marlene came out. How many times am I going to say that? If you were playing a drinking game for every time that I said Martha Marcy May Marlene, you'd be totally wasted. So she must have, she probably did Silent House before M4 came out. I'll call it M4. Yeah, so they put her in that, and then she's doing these indie movies. She did Old Boy, and she was uncredited in Captain America. She was in Godzilla, big budget movie, but she was pretty much the wife. She was just the girl in that. And I'm assuming she's going to get busy in Avengers Age of Ultron. But that's a big budget ensemble film. She's not carrying that movie. Like, when you have, like, the only real movie star, for the most part, is Robert Downey Jr. Like, he's the fucking star. Like, you have a beast like the homie, why am I forgetting? I'm getting old, man. Ruffalo, Mark Ruffalo. I always doubt myself, and then I'm like, oh, I'm dumb, and I don't remember. But, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, they do that. And I was watching Easy A the other day. I was watching it yesterday. I was killing time before I went out. And that was a star-making turn for Emma Stone. Like, I mean, she was in Superbad. She was the girl in that. And then they gave her Easy A. And it's like, yo, she's a fucking star. She was like a kid in the rocker. She's in the House Bunny. Like, she's these small little parts. Kind of like a lead in Paper Man. I vaguely remember that. She was in Zombieland. But Easy A, she had a string of movies where she's working. But then she does Easy A, and it's like, boom. Like, okay, she's a movie star. But they haven't given her, like, you don't see them having vehicles where they headline a movie anymore. It's the studios they're afraid to spend money on all these people. So they're going to invest in these teen novels. They're gonna like these young adult fiction. So you have your Harry Potters, you know, that's successful. You have Twilight, the Divergent series, Hunger Games. That made Jennifer Lawrence, she's a movie star. She's a movie star. So much so that she does the Hunger Games. She gets an Oscar for God, Silver Linings Playbook, and she becomes this movie star. She gets the nom for Winter's Bone and all that, but then she gets that Oscar for Best Actress, and now she solidified herself as a movie star. And she still got one more Hunger Games movie to do, so that's somebody who I would say is a real star. And but I don't know if, are they going to come? My only other thing is, are people going to come to your movie when you're not in a franchise, when you're not in a franchise that they're accustomed to seeing you do? There's a movie called Selena. I don't know what it's about, but it's her and Bradley Cooper in this period piece. And it was kind of like a straight to video on demand type thing, and it's not doing well. And it's like, I think we're obviously in different times, but nobody's really, the studios, I guess, are afraid. That's why you keep seeing all these Fast and the Furious. That shit's making so much money that they'll keep making them. They'll have Paul Walker holograms and shit in all of them. So they keep making those, but when you talk about making somebody a star and actually fostering their career, when somebody would get a studio deal where, oh, let's make some shit around Emma Stone and make her do really well. Like, another person's career that I really think never lived up to her talent is Anna Faris. Like, Anna Faris, I think, is hilarious. She's attractive. She's talented. And I've never really seen her in anything that really focused, that really just, like, that really brought that out. Like, yeah, she's in a sitcom now. I've seen, like, maybe two or three episodes of that, like, Mother or Mom or something like that. But never really saw her in anything that really accentuated what she could do. Case in point, Ryan Reynolds got all these chances to be successful in movies that didn't really do well. I think his best performance was Just Friends. And people now are excited about him because he's playing Deadpool, which is a Marvel character that I don't know that much about, but people are really excited about it. And they're hoping that he does well. And they're showing, you know, clips and tweets of him in costume and all that. So people are really excited about that. But he played Green Lantern. That didn't work. And quite a few other movies. Like, now he's in, like, a art house film with Helen Mirren and the girl from Orphan Black playing the young Helen Mirren, I think. Not playing Helen Mirren's aunt or some shit. Woman in Gold. You really don't, as a female actress, you really don't get to, for the most part, spread your wings unless you're doing a project that you want to do, like, that you create on your own, like Sarah Polley does. Like, now she's the actress that was one of the leads in Go. And she's she's just forged her own path. She directed Take This Waltz, I believe, with Seth Rogen and Michelle Williams. Michelle Williams, another actress, fucking monster. So fucking good. Did she win for Brokeback Mountain? See, now I'm going on a tangent of all these. Michelle Williams. I want to say she won. I feel like she did. I really do feel like she won something. She's somebody else that just, again, does these small movies and kills it. Like, most people now are just going after projects that they want to do. Like, she was in this movie called Mammoth with her and Gael Garcia Bernal. Blue Valentine. Did she win an Oscar? Did they do the awards and achievements? Let's see. Oh, here we go. It's at the top of the thing. Guest appearance. She played. One of her career highlights was Brokeback Mountain 2005, which earned Williams a Best Supporting Actress nomination for the Academy Awards of the Rose. So she didn't win. She won. Wendy and Lucy's good. Depressing as fuck. She played this drifter in, like, the Pacific Northwest. She got a nom for Best Actress in Blue Valentine. She won a Golden Globe for Pay. So she never won an Oscar, but she's really good. Like, she's another one. It's just like, okay, you have these women that are pretty, which we in Hollywood objectify women. She's got that and the talent. And you're just like, why aren't these people bigger than they are? But, yeah. And he mentioned Rose Byrne. Rose Byrne's another one that's good. I like her a lot. Just haven't seen. Now she's in, like, she's kind of coming up in these, in these movies. Like, she got some laughs in, Bridesmaids. She's in the new Melissa McCarthy movie, Spy. But she's playing, like, she's kind of playing second fiddle in a lot of these. Yeah, it's just it's interesting. It's oh, this is pretty fun to dissect. This made me ramble for so much. So if you felt like I rambled a lot in this episode, I would just blame Michael Felder for that. Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, movie stars. Yeah, they're movie stars. Owen and Luke Wilson, they tried. They're just like, you know. Paul Rudd made him he's a star. I think there's a difference. It's a difference. Like, every time you see, like, a certain actor and you're like, oh, this guy's in a movie, this girl's in a movie, oh, I'm going to go see it. Reese Witherspoon, Oscar nom for Wild. She won for Walk the Line. She's a movie star. I love me some Reese Witherspoon, so I'm a ride for her. It's just I think it's just different times, and right around the time where Amy Adams and Rachel McAdams came into the game, like really made a name for themselves, things changed. And I don't think you'll see a shift until, or them getting the credit they deserve, as if they're doing a project, like a pet project that they're doing, and they push it and they do it themselves. Like Reese Witherspoon didn't win for Wild, but it was a project that she was like, I'm tailoring this to do what you've never seen me do before. I'm taking all the ideas of what you thought about me, and I'm putting myself into a project where you can see me, like, do work. And that's what she did, you know? And even though she didn't win, it was still a really, really good movie. Showed her titties in that joint too. I'm such a dick. I'm sorry. But she was great in that. And who won? Why am I forgetting who? I'm just totally 2015 Oscar winners. So bad. Cause I didn't really watch the, Julianne Moore, still Alice. Yeah, like Julianne Moore, been doing it for a long time. Plus Reese already won, and I saw Still Alice and I was like, yep, she killed that shit. So thanks Felder. It's your fault if people did not like me blabbing. I'm not gonna put that on you, but I am. Spoilers, I really don't like doing the spoilers, unless, like, if I talk about a movie and then maybe a week or two, if I'm talking to somebody and they've seen the movie, then I'll spoil it. But Felder, you can always text me or call me if you think something, you want to see something and you're on the fence about it. So I have no problem with that. I just try not to spoil movies as much as I can. What else? Was there anything else that I wanted to talk about here? Finally listened to the Wale, gave that a second listen. He snapped on that joint, man. That's the album About Nothing is his best project to date, his best album, like studio album. There's always been songs that I liked on his stuff. The Attention Deficit will always have a place in my heart because of the year that it came out was when I started doing comedy, and quite a few of those songs that, like, when I did my first headlining night ever at Caroline's, I came up to The Prescription, which is the last record on Attention Deficit, and it is one of my favorite Wale songs. And so he went in. The last part of it just kind of like, it just seemed like it tapered off a little bit. It might have been a little too long, and I think if it was tighter, it probably would have had more of an impact. But overall, it's a good album. Wale is always going to give you dope verses. and it's a good album. And he's got a really good song called The Matrimony with Usher, and it's like Usher like you haven't heard in a long ass time. Like on Usher on the hook, it's like fucking great. Like where is this Usher? That's what I'm talking about. Like R&B music, where the fuck is it? I mean, like for the most part, I mean, I listen to the adult contemporary stuff of like the Foreign Exchange, of course, but that's kind of like an electronic type thing. And you know, that's some grown folk shit. And it is good. But you just don't really hear it, or maybe I'm out of the loop. If there's anybody you think I should be listening to, you let me know. Also, I want to say, I listened to Pilot Talk 3, and that's really good. That's Currency's latest album. And I was walking through New York City, walking to the Bowery Poetry Club from the Union Square. It's like a nice 15-20 minute walk. And then after that, I walked back for wherever the hell I was, down there in the Lower East Side, back to Union Square, just walking through New York City. Like, I like that too. Like, walking through that, the nice areas of New York City, walking through downtown New York City, and just like looking at people. Like, that's like a nice dichotomy from like driving through upstate New York. That's beautiful. They're both beautiful in their own way. But listening to Currency makes the type of music that makes you feel like your life is so much better than it is. It makes you feel like you're a jet setter, even though you just go to a cubicle 5 days a week. Like, he makes this, like, he's, I would say he has the best, one of the best ears for music in the game. And it's been like that for quite some time. Like, maybe like the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, like for almost a decade, like just great production, great raps. It's a thing I've been talking about for the past few weeks and months about listening to a rapper. I want the rapper that I'm listening to, whenever I listen to him, I want to feel like he thinks he's the best rapper that you've ever heard. And I want him to think that, and I want to think that when I listen to him, you know, that's my criteria of what I like about hip hop, because it's just my opinion. That's my hot take, and it's sponsored by Insomnia Cookies, various locations all over New York City. And RIP to a lot of the Mrs. Fields that are missing in malls throughout America. So I gave you some music recommendations. We talked again pretty much about Delicate White Angels. We talked about them last week, and we went into further depth this week. We talked about a really great movie, Ex Machina. Talked about some comedy shows that I did. Gave you some plugs. And I think I'm going to call it an episode. So I want to thank you. I thank everyone for listening. Thank you for the continued support. Remember, rate and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher. And I'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.